Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Yeah. Got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. As always, we want to thank those people who have chosen to follow us. So far, we can be found on iTunes by searching for The Back of the Class, and we can be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. That's all one word. Also, we've started our new blog. That's thebackoftheclass.blogspot.com. That's where we link to the things we've talked about on the show and generally make a new sense of ourselves. We would love to get your feedback and your comments, so let us know what's going on with you. Each week on our show, one of us brings an educational resource. Yes. Each week on our show, one of us brings an educational resource into the discussion. We then spend about 20 minutes discussing it, trying to focus on specific solutions to the problems that education faces, and then we spitball. That's where the two people who didn't bring the part of this, the material in get to really lay into the person who did. I am Patrick O'Shea, an assistant professor of instructional technology at Appalachian State University. Joining me in place of Simon is Mark Salata of Mark's Minute. Mark, I'll let you introduce yourself.
What is this?
What?
He gets to introduce himself?
Yeah, he can say who he is. Good. As always,
I'm Mark Salata.
Okay, that's enough, really. That's all.
It really is.
The Mark Salata.
From Mark's Minute.
Yes, of Mark's Minute.
Mark Salata would like to say.
Mark's 2 minutes that he's added so far. As always, the curmudgeonly Daniel Curry Corcoran is here. He's one of my best friends, and I'm not even being sarcastic when I say that.
It's always a pleasure to join you, my friend. And Mark, good to hear your voice. Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear yours directly. I'm following the blog and listening to the podcast every week. And yes. It's just great to be live with you guys right now.
It really is.
Yeah, live is a relative term. It sounds like Danny is not so live. He's not lively right now.
Not lively.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get him pumped up. We can get him cranked up.
I just spent through 30 minutes of my wife telling me you're listening to this all wrong. So.
By this, and I did put air quotes around that, by this you mean the topic that Mark has brought for this this week. So as I will turn it over to Mark to hopefully give us a quick rundown and summary of what the topic is. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, well, counter to popular belief, I will be brief in this summary. And
make sure you summarize thoroughly, though.
Yes, I shall. So
it's only a 30-minute show. So.
Yes, I understand, gentlemen.
Okay.
So I'm a listener of TED.com talks, as I'm sure some of your followers are also. And one that was recently brought to my attention was one by Barry Schwartz. It's actually his second TED Talk titled Using Our Practical Wisdom. And his earlier talk was titled On Our Loss of Wisdom. And I thought that he did touch on a little bit of education, but he was actually looking at all different kinds of professions and how basically we tend to have a default that if something doesn't work, we should make a better rule. And the rules will protect us from making mistakes. And in his earlier talk on our loss of wisdom, he makes the case that excessive amounts of rules only make us mediocre. And he proposes in the talk that I referenced for our discussion, using our practical wisdom, is that we actually start utilizing practical wisdom in everyday occurrences, as opposed to saying, well, that's the rule, we have to follow it, even though maybe doing something else would be more practical and more wise.
Mark, sorry to interrupt, but perhaps you could...
yes, go right ahead.
Maybe you could define practical wisdom.
I can define practical wisdom?
Oh, perhaps. Well, I don't know. Can you? I'm thinking of our listeners.
Okay, well, in fact, in the talk, Schwartz defines practical wisdom as the moral will to do the right thing and the moral skill to figure out what the right thing is. And what I see this as is he brings up the word virtue. He refers to practical wisdom as a virtue that needs to be modeled and taught. Not unlike your previous podcasts on, what was it? Was it CARE program?
Yeah, that was one that Danny brought.
Yeah, actually, I really liked that one in the sense that it made...
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome back any week, buddy.
Well, the point of referencing that is that I believe it is bringing what we think are the most important things, the moral will, virtues, empathy, which are actually very important things, bringing them front and center in the classroom and front and center in thinking about how we should, you know, do things. He says that it's the moral will, practical wisdom is the moral will to do right, the right thing, and the moral skill to figure out what the right thing is. And so what I would, why I'm bringing this to the table is that I don't think that we actually practice or model practical wisdom in our schools. In fact, I said in my blog, I titled my blog for this, Practical Wisdom Deficit Disorder. And I attended my daughter's school today, and I learned.
You realize that would be pronounced PWOD.
Yes, yes, or PWDD. PWD. Yeah, exactly.
I got to put another disclaimer on the podcast this week.
I'm telling you, PG-13, or as Danny says, rated R.
Yeah.
So juvenile, and he's a professor.
That's the only thing that people listen for.
Did you say such things at your interview for this position?
Absolutely.
He said duty. All right.
Anyway, have I pushed you off the rails?
No, you have not. Yes. I am on.
You're nowhere near the rails right now, my friend.
Let me tell you this.
Okay.
For example, at my daughter's school, it is a rule that no one but a nurse can provide Tylenol to a child, even if the child has a ridiculous fever, because of whatever reasons. And I don't think that's practical. Allowing a child to continue to have a high fever just because a nurse is not there to certify is ridiculous. I'm sure there's many other examples that, like Danny could bring to the table of rules and regs that are in K-12, because he's more experienced in that than I, rules that basically bind the teacher or the administrators from actually applying practical wisdom. I think
it's an interesting catch-22, because, mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things he was talking about was the idea of, you know, when things aren't going the way you want, this is when you mm-hmm. kind of institute these new rules, right? Or, you know, you give people incentives to try to get them to do what they want.
Right.
And part of the reason I would argue that it's not going really well is because nobody really exerts a lot of practical wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had more practical wisdom, we'd need less mm-hmm. rules. So it seems that the only reason we have all of these rules is because we don't have a lot of individuals who are actually capable of, in and of themselves, mm-hmm. exerting a lot of practical wisdom.
Well,
but since we don't have that, we've created rules. So if we had
I agree with you, and I think what happened is once we apply more rules, we get into a cycle of now we're dumbing down everything that, okay, well, the only thing I need to do is follow those rules, and I'm okay.
But isn't that people continually don't display a lot of practical wisdom?
I think at in certain cases we're actually not allowing professionals, teachers or administrators to actually apply it.
Well, like let's take your Tylenol example. I mean, I think a lot of times in education, I can speak primarily to education, but even in other, you know, in other venues, for instance, you know, we had a little celebration at our house, a little devotional for Martin Luther King Day. And one of the mothers that was here is really a Cub Scout leader, right? So she's able to be a Cub Scout leader for her boys' troop. I, on the other hand, as a male, can really not be in the same type of position for Girl Scouts for my daughters. You know, if I go camping with them, I have to walk 5 miles to the men's camp. You know, a ridiculous rule in my opinion, but the rule was put in place because there have been horrific atrocities committed by really bad people. So I think the same thing with the Tylenol case is that we only allow nurses to give Tylenol because people have made really bad mistakes who don't understand the kid's medical background. You know, so what I think we often do is that often our exceptions create our rules.
Exactly. And that's his case.
People, to protect people from people who are not able to exercise practical wisdom.
AKA
so one of the
idiots.
Things that I took away from the article was that, I mean, fundamentally that one of the reasons we don't have a lot of practical wisdom or exert a lot of it is because we as individuals can't agree on, let's just say, a true north, or we're all going to focus on one direction. You know, I believe this, you believe that. We would talk ad nauseum about practical wisdom, and then let's set up rules to see whose practical wisdom is better. So, I mean, I don't think it's not easy to replicate. Therefore, we as a society say, we're just going to protect ourselves, which I don't necessarily have a problem with.
Well, especially since we as a society tend to be litigious and let the courts decide for us, which is, you know, neither here nor there.
Well, I can – let me say this with the Tylenol example. My daughter was in a preschool, and their rule was they had a form. Parents fill it out stating what we accept or allow for them to give to the child and what not. And,
but isn't it the same thing with peanut butter?
It could be used for the same thing for peanut butter.
But the reason we have that rule is that kids have been really hurt because – you know, we've said, you know, this kid can't have peanut butter, but then, you know, something happens, something slips, kid gets peanut butter, and he almost dies. So we're like, all right, no more of that nonsense. We're just going to protect all the kids from maybe one person who didn't read the rules.
But for the medicine, right? For a Tylenol, just sticking with the simple Tylenol, as long as they
like
have
the hard peanut butter example,
exactly. If they have the if they have the written down, this is the amount, this is what you're allowed to, I give you, I allow you to administer this to my child. The discussion at her school, at this public school, was that that's not even allowed.
And the
principal who's there had an example of a child having a fever, checking the kid's fever, going from 99 degrees all the way to 103 because they couldn't get in touch with the parents. They couldn't get administer Tylenol, for God's sake. And it came down to the point that she actually drove the child to another school several miles away where a nurse was on hand that they can give two things of Tylenol, for God's sake.
Because now, you know what would happen if they give the Tylenol to the girl when she gets up to 101, and God forbid she has some freaky reaction to it, right? They're going to say, you know,
not if the parents signed a form that said you're allowed to give.
Be in court,
and that's where we are with the rules. Now, what if the child goes from 101 to 103, goes into shock before she gets the Tylenol?
And the band goes marching on.
Exactly. Are we in the court now?
The biggest problem, I think, with this issue is that it's really only a problem if schools don't have nurses. You know, if your school has a nurse, you can have that rule, and it's not a big deal. My son goes to a school that has a full-time nurse on staff.
Every day?
Every day, yeah. He goes.
That's excellent, because you know what? Our school has a full-time nurse 3 hours out of the whole freaking week. And they're cutting back more on funding.
It's a different podcast.
Yeah, it's absolutely a different podcast. You know, I would look at different ways. So here's what
word in with a lot of.
I would recommend that.
Don't give me started.
I would recommend that you guys read a book called Nudge.
Book? What's that?
It's a book called Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness by two guys named Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein.
And this I don't think Danny wants to improve happiness.
This is all about setting up systems so that we nudge people in the direction of making the right decisions. See, one of the issues I had with this guy, philosophically, I couldn't agree more with this guy that people should be, you know, practically wise.
Mm-hmm.
But
his name, man.
I would be happier.
Be respectful.
Here's the problem. That's great in a utopia, but we don't live in a world where everybody is practically wise. We don't. And so
do we live in an idiocracy?
Not yet, but it's going. if you ask me which direction it's going, then, here's the question: is I sit here and I read this and I listen to this guy speak, and I say, yeah, you tell it. People should be trusted to use their professional judgment. They should be, but they're not. And he makes the argument that they should, but he never tells us how. You know, how do we go about changing that? And other than
becoming a Baha'i, which he does not mention at all.
See, I even wrote this down in here in my notes. I said, mm-hmm. I know that I'm in danger of starting a conversation about religion and the Baha'i faith, but let's remember that this isn't a possibility in educational settings. We can't mandate that kind
we
of
can't
stuff in
them.
School.
Yes,
I can suggest something else.
But let me just finish my thought here, you know, because
go ahead if you can.
It seems to me that this whole thing comes down to understanding what we value as individuals and as a community. Because if we understand what we value, then we can trust or distrust people to follow, to do what we think is in our best interest, what's in everybody's best interest. But that doesn't explain how we deal with different perspectives on these issues. There are legitimate arguments for guns rights and gun control. And there's never going to be a right answer in that case. So even a practically wise decision isn't black or white. It's full of gray. And so, in the world where we live, where there is gray, how do we go about making it so that people can be trusted to use their own professional judgment? And we can
without everybody becoming a Baha'i.
Without everybody becoming a Baha'i.
Okay.
Right.
Good luck.
Well, can I suggest something?
Absolutely. I'm throwing it open to the
general public.
To you guys, yeah.
Well, I think...
Well, now we're just general public.
well, and all the followers out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now that you're on the podcast,
you're down
we've lost the followers.
Lost a follower. Maybe Simon can follow us. He doesn't actually participate in the blog, so...
Yeah. So he was actually bringing up the Barry Schwartz was bringing up the word virtue, and he said practical wisdom is the primary virtue, and practical wisdom is a bit.
Well, he quoted Aristotle as saying that. So
yeah. So okay, give it to the old guy. I actually would like to see virtues taught in the schools. Not unlike, and what I'm talking about is virtues a la the Virtues Project, which people can check out, virtuesproject.com, where they have 52 virtues, assertiveness, caring, cleanliness, compassion, honor, humility, idealism, joyfulness, courtesy. And I think, not unlike the CARE program, but where they have this Virtues Project program, helping develop this community within the school where virtues and positive feedback are instilled. I think you would actually start having the context in which you can have respectful discussions about what's the right thing to do. Yep. And
then what happens from that, though? Then we start praying in school again.
Not necessarily. If
not
you
necessarily,
would like.
But there's a lot of people who are not practically wise, and therefore the Virtues Project gets a bad name.
Well,
now
the
we
first,
can't teach that anymore. Now we got to set up a rule for
why
how the
can't
Virtues
you teach
Project.
The Virtues Project?
I'm saying
because the Virtues Project they have Educator Virtues Guide.
Oh, we have a guide, therefore we're going to get it right. Okay.
There's no rules no. there.
No, they have.
Yeah,
they
there's
have,
no rules in the guide. I'm sure.
Well, I don't understand how you go from the Virtues Project to slippery slope to religion because the Virtues Project.
Because what happens
project,
is somebody who is a non-practically wise person uses mm-hmm. the Virtues Guide to get their own ideology into the classroom. You know, so what happens is in the name of virtues, they begin teaching morality, and therefore a parent gets upset mm-hmm. who's not making a practically wise decision, and takes it to the school board.
Mm-hmm.
That incites this crazy where it becomes this idea, you know, as we do in the media now, we quickly get away from the actual issue of this is a one-off instance, you know, somebody made a mistake, that, you know, now this fuels the people saying, oh, see, this virtues guy just leading to more religion in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden we have to create these rules for professional development or rules of behavior because of one bad decision.
And that's the
even
problem
if you teach
is,
virtue.
Yeah, and the problem is that the mm-hmm. rule is going to be no using this curriculum.
Well, we're done with it.
Which doesn't mention religion in any shape, way, or form.
Yes, it's easier. I'm going to come out on a limb here. And this evening is my turn to say I couldn't agree with Pat more.
What?
Oh, my.
What?
I'm feeling
Let me take a break.
Weird. I'm feeling
Let's a take
little
Take a little,
woozy.
Let the followers absorb that.
Wow.
But what? Wow. One of the things I wanted to do, I mean, I think this is a little, and I believe I'm quoting the right guy, a little Rawlsian. You know, wasn't it John Rawls who believed we should all go back in a bag and kind of shake us all back up and throw us out, and we're just happy with our lot in life. Isn't that John Rawls?
I've never heard that, but sounds cool.
I believe it's John Rawls that said, you know, his philosophy was, you know, we just need to start over, and that, you know, we'll put you back in a bag, and we'll shake everybody up, and you'll be a trash person, trash collector, and you'll be happy with it because there'll be some sort of justice in the world. I think one of the things is a little bit Rawlsian because let's get to the story of the toy gun.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't help listen to that toy gun episode from the closing arguments in the movie or the book, for those of you who read. What was the one where the little girl gets, you know, she has all that issue with the little black girl in the South, A Time to Kill.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he's reading that, and he asks the jury to shut their eyes, right? If you read this toy gun episode in here where, you know, the guy had a toy gun, right, what color is that guy? That this judge gave him this big break. When you're reading the story, you had to have some image of who he was. I mean, do you imagine him being white or do you imagine him being black?
Are you asking this or is this just...
Well, I'm kind of asking. I'm not really asking, but I am kind of asking. But, I mean, the idea is that we have a lot of other issues
So, in essence, you're asking us whether we're idiots or racists.
No, not racists. What I'm saying is that his premise was kind of built upon this idea that we have this great justice in our society. I'm not sure if a young black kid is using a toy gun and commits an armed robbery, but he's not given a different sentence. I mean, that's
Absolutely.
Where our judicial system works.
Absolutely. Justice is supposed to be blind,
but
you
it's
know,
not.
It's not.
We've created You're rules not. Because justice is not blind.
Right. Which the mm-hmm. rules are just as blind, as just as, you know,
yeah.
skewed as any other system. That
it's this horrible
into.
Conundrum you get into.
Right.
All right, boys.
Because
so.
We don't have practically wise people.
Okay. All right.
So.
Okay. Go
we're
ahead.
We're tossing this out. What's the solution, boys? Is there any application of practical wisdom that can be done in the schools.
Here's the best thing that this guy said in the whole 23 minutes he was talking.
Barry Schwartz, not this guy.
No, we'll put that on the blog. Don't worry. I can say this guy. It's fine. The quote he had was, "Wise people know when and how to bend the rules, and a wise person does this rule bending and improvising in the service of the right aims." Mm-hmm. Now, the question I have is, you know, having read things like Nudge and Freakonomics and Super Freakonomics and all of these other economists who are talking about the value of incentives, I think
it's a lot. Then.
I think it's short-sighted to discount the power of incentives to make social change. So if we want people to be socially wise, then we have to have good incentives. You know, right now we have good incentives for, you know, driving. You know, there's lots of rules involved with driving, but those are good rules because they, by and large, keep people safe if they follow those rules. You know, it's
I thought it tied into the podcast that you had done earlier on the whole RSA Animate, where, you know, he was really saying the truth about what really motivates us. It's not a complete lack of incentives. It's the right type of incentive.
Absolutely.
Of course. I agree.
So the answer to this, you know, is, you know, he talks in here about, you know, the educators should listen to psychologists and not economists. I don't buy that at all. I think you should listen to both of those people. You know, this isn't an either or proposition. And by saying it, it smacks of somebody who sees himself as having all the answers and devaluing all other perspectives. And
he's a professor at a college, so I mean, he's kind of focused.
Not only that, he kept going on about me and my co-author. I mean, I get it. You're an author. You wrote a piece. Good job.
But you know, the idea that we aren't, you know, fallible people who do good things for the wrong reasons. That's, you know, we're incentivized by different things. And sometimes that's, you know, selfish motives. But if we can leverage that to do good things, then it's just about having smart rules and smart incentives rather than lots of rules and lots of incentives. That's the solution for me.
This is where I think it ties directly back into the kind of conversation we've had over the past 3 or 4 weeks, and this idea of a lack of community, and not talking about the hugging type community I often get ridiculed for, but just really getting out there and, you know, knowing the people in your school building.
Did someone say hugging?
I did say hugging. I like to say hugging every podcast. It's my new thing.
Now I've got to put the PG rating.
I'm going to get it back down to G. I'm going to work on it. But this idea of this lack of community, I mean, the gentleman from Canada, when we talked about the destruction of the American child, was talking about this lack of community. I mean, we've talked about schools being the bedrock of community. Until we spend more time building better communities, whether that's in your workplace or here in your neighborhood, we're not going to know one another well enough to say what is a good incentive for you. Because I don't know what you're interested in. I mean, people aren't necessarily interested in money or more vacation. They might be interested in, you know, having a, you know, teaching a different class once in a while. I mean, that might be incentive enough, but I don't know you on that level. So until we spend more time, and this gets back to Mark's idea of, I'm not against the Teaching the Virtues Project. There was a story on NPR this morning that says, you know, we spend so much time working on academics that we spend no time when kids are out there and have to make these really difficult decisions of, do I have sex or do I not have sex? They're kind of out there on their own. We won't spend any time helping them with that. So I think the idea, it always to me comes back to, you know, spending more time in community will make us more practically wise because we'll know each other better.
Right.
I just have to say this, that I think both of your comments at the end just demonstrates some practical wisdom.
Oh, that's, you're just kissing up now. Listen, you'll be invited back. Don't worry. All right.
Well, you have to introduce yourself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, right now we're getting along in time. Daniel, did you want to throw a spitball in here?
Do I need to?
No. You don't absolutely really have to.
I mean, the guy's a rookie. I mean, let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he tried really hard.
Right. And listen, again,
I think that's spitball enough, that comment.
Yeah. The thing that I would say here is that, again, as with many of the materials that I've presented that have been presented here, this is great in philosophy. Nobody is going to argue with giving people, you know, flexibility to be professional. But, and I'm not singling you out. I've done this. Daniel's done this. Simon's done this. What we're missing is that practical application of it. You know, how do we go about inculcating it in the culture? And I think that it's, you know, the answer, quite simply, this may sound like a, you know, a simplistic answer, but I think that the answer is that each of us has to take a more active role in what's going on around us rather than just depending on someone else to do it.
Be the change you want to be, Pat. Be the change you want to be.
Is there a song in there or something?
Yeah, hold on. Let me wait a minute. I think there's a song. Hold on. Let me get it for you. Yeah. Hold on.
I believe the children are the future.
Guy has a song. He's been waiting all day to push the play button.
It was like he had that planned.
Cue it.
Holy cow.
Or he listens to the Green Day all day long. I don't know.
Did you guys hear that?
Oh, yeah, we heard it.
I mean, one of the things that, I mean, just if I could, just one quick second. I mean, I had a friend at work who came up to me the other day, and she said, oh, I got this at my church, and your religion's mentioned in it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. Let me see what it is. And, you know, she was, you know, and of course it was a pamphlet on cults and superstitions or whatnot. You know, it's just like, okay. My only question was this. My only response to her was like this. I said, listen. We have differences of opinion. I would say a lot of it's just interpretation. We spend so much time debating what our differences are that we have no time to talk about our similarities. I think if we spent more time putting our differences aside, that's probably a horrible cliche, but focusing on some of the similarities we have to people who may be atheists or whatever, but we all have these common principles of being practically wise. If we could focus on those and have a community to do that,
talking about our differences is much more exciting than talking about our similarities.
Yeah, it does. It does fuel us.
Oh. UP standing up too? Yes.
Well, then you could get a whole other discussion, though, which we would raise the rating up to R. So we'll probably stop there.
Yeah. All right. Well, if we're not going to have a true spitball, I think that at this point, I think it'll be a good place to stop.
Will we have Simon's minute?
I don't think we'll have Simon's minute. I don't know if they in whatever restaurant he's in right now eating chicken. I don't think they allow recordings.
I would like to send my regards to my dear friend. I would like to say hello. He was sorely missed, and
absolutely, we took a huge step down.
I'm still here.
I'm still here, guys. I'm still on the phone.
I'm listening. I'm standing right next to you.
Oh, we still love our follower.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
All right,
Mark,
boys.
It was great to talk with you. Danny, it was great to talk to you as well.
See you guys.
Got it.